Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Diversity in Clinical Practice, a practical and shame-free guide to reducing cultural offenses and repairing cross-cultural relationships. By Lambers Fisher, MS, LMFT, MDIV. Narrated by Jamie Lincoln Smith. Publisher's note. In this audio edition, you will hear references to worksheets, figures, and pictures present in the print and e-book formats of the book. Introduction. What makes this different from other books on diversity? This book is inspired by the many individuals, professional and non-professional alike, who have shied away from other books, courses, and seminars on the topic of multicultural awareness and diversity. Many individuals have expressed a desire to attend a training on this topic, only to find the material presented in a way that created feelings of shame, guilt, and fear. Others have expressed that the information presented was so deep and focused on the history of various cultural groups that they left with an appreciation for people different than themselves, but they also felt more incompetent as the information simply highlighted how much they didn't know. In light of such experiences, the goal of this book is to offer a balanced, practical, and applicable perspective on this topic, and to help you feel more confident and competent on matters of multicultural awareness and diversity. I hope to provide insights that you can put into practice immediately and that equip you to reduce cultural barriers, misunderstandings, and offenses so you can have better relationships with those from a greater variety of cultural backgrounds. Who should read this book? Although the language in this book is primarily geared toward mental health professionals seeking to build better therapeutic rapport with their clients, it is also applicable to a wide range of individuals beyond the counseling profession, including medical professionals interested in strategies for improving their bedside manner and for avoiding communication barriers that can limit treatment effectiveness, educators and administrators desiring to help students feel respected and understood in consideration of their cultural differences and uniqueness rather than in spite of them. Business leaders, motivated to reach out to new and existing clients in a way that helps them feel like valued customers, making efforts to learn about their needs and meeting a greater variety of needs in their community. Religious leaders, hoping to convey their desire to understand and accept people's differences while making efforts to meet spiritual and emotional needs. Politicians and community leaders, faced with changing demographics and limited expertise, but who have a sincere motivation to help create healthy community interactions and bring about positive change. Law enforcement professionals, seeking to improve public perceptions, cultivate genuine interactions, and make effective decisions for their own safety, as well as the safety and well-being of the communities they protect. Anyone who wants to confront fear and discomfort stemming from lack of knowledge and learn how to effectively interact with people who are different. Why read this book? Many white helping professionals feel scared or ignorant. I began training therapists on the topic of multicultural awareness and diversity while I was employed at a large counseling agency, which had some ethnic diversity, but consisted predominantly of white mental health professionals. One of the leaders of that agency had the idea to create a training series for therapists where they would utilize existing therapists with particular strengths to provide the training. It began with finding someone who was good with assessments, another therapist who was great with ethics, another who was good with crisis management, and so on. When leaders asked, "Who can we get to do a training on multicultural awareness and diversity?" the brainstorming stalled. Why? Because most therapists concluded that they knew some, but not enough, on what is commonly considered a very sensitive topic to teach without offending others. They say things like, "I don't have a lot of experience working with this population. I don't know how to meet the needs of that population. I don't have enough diverse experiences. I don't want to accidentally offend others while trying to help? Or, what can I possibly say that can help others if I'm not a cultural expert? After a while, I volunteered my services, not because I considered myself an expert on every culture, far from it, actually. Rather, I felt that I knew enough to be able to help those who felt either too afraid or too ignorant to act. When I began providing training for therapists at that large counseling agency, it became clear that many minority counselors assumed their minority status was synonymous with diversity awareness or competence. I would casually check in with colleagues to see if they would be attending an upcoming training, and sometimes the response from therapists of color would be a very sincere and disinterested, "Nope." When I curiously followed up and asked why, they would tilt their heads and open their hands as if to say, "Isn't it obvious?" What they were doing was non-verbally referencing their visibly evident ethnic minority status as the obvious reason why they didn't need to attend a training on multicultural awareness and diversity. My response to these messages was to point out that there is more to cultural awareness than having the experience of one type of minority group. Being part of an ethnic minority doesn't make someone knowledgeable about other cultures involving different genders, sexual orientations, ages, abilities, religious beliefs, socioeconomic statuses, and more. We can all benefit from increasing our competence through the lessons learned from others' experiences. Cultural misunderstandings negatively impact our clients. Too often, it is our clients who feel oppressed or misunderstood, avoid counseling altogether, or leave counseling early due to unintentional and avoidable cultural misunderstandings. Can we reasonably expect to know everything all the time? Not at all. Neither can we rest in hope that as long as we don't intend to offend, then it won't feel offensive to our clients. Ignorance is not bliss. We have an ethical and professional responsibility to accept that we don't know everything, to value what we do know, and to make the most of every opportunity to learn more. What this book is not. A history lesson. In order to make this book practical and usable for you as soon as possible, I will focus on the present and how to practically engage with diversity today. A politics debate. Another reason people shy away from the topic of cultural diversity is that people tend to have very strong feelings about one side of the argument versus another, often sparking controversy or debate. As therapists, we are often tasked with helping people wrestle with controversial feelings no matter what side of the controversy they or we are on. Therefore, I will address a variety of topics in this book, many of which may be considered controversial. However, I will make every effort to discuss each topic in a way that focuses less on the absolute rightness or wrongness of the topics, and instead on the varied legitimate feelings and perspectives of the individuals who express them. Hence the lack of need for debate. You need to be able to understand both sides of any argument, whether you agree with it or not, and I will explore how to do so effectively and professionally. An exhaustive everything you need to know about cheat sheet or stereotype list. This book doesn't have a chapter on every possible cultural group with all of the essential facts you'll need to know about them. Instead of providing a lot of information about a few cultural groups, this book will provide specifically chosen perspectives on a number of cultural groups. More importantly, I will discuss practical strategies you can utilize to help others from various cultural groups. A cultural-specific diagnostic and treatment plan. It would probably be very convenient if I were able to tell you. Whenever you meet a new client from this or that cultural group, and you get to the point in your initial assessment when you need to determine an appropriate diagnosis, open your DSM-5 and turn to these pages to find all the diagnoses that apply to that cultural group. Although that would save a lot of professional effort, it does not work that way. Not with diagnostic assessments, and not with treatment plans. Being a part of a cultural group doesn't determine one's diagnoses, Though certain cultural experiences can influence verbal, behavioral, or emotional symptom expression. And the more you know about various cultural experiences, values, and ways of being, the more competent and effective you can become at helping identify the source of clients' struggles as well as appropriate solutions to those struggles. A cultural guilt trip. Many people have conveyed their caution about reading books like this or about attending seminars on this topic because the authors or speakers spend most of the time saying things like, "I shouldn't have to say this, but," or, "You should already know this by now, but." That approach tends to make people feel ashamed and guilty. I believe that we have all learned what we know from the experiences we have been fortunate to have. Yet, we have not all had the same opportunities to learn. It is pointless to shame someone for their lack of opportunity. What you can expect from this book. Breadth versus depth. In order to make this book as practical and immediately useful as possible, I will try to briefly address many relevant topics related to multicultural awareness and diversity. Each of the areas covered in this book could justifiably fill its own book, seminar, or graduate course. Therefore, if at any point you find yourself yearning for more information or practical tools on a particular cultural topic, I encourage you to seek out books and seminars on that topic for greater edification. Increased understanding of diversity and competence. There is a lot of misunderstanding regarding what diversity and competence mean. I will recommend ways to understand key words that can help you communicate more effectively. Increased knowledge of self and others. Cultural competence involves increasing knowledge and awareness of others, as well as oneself. Simply put, the more you understand about who you are, the better you can understand the ways in which you are similar or dissimilar to others. Enhanced perspective and empathy for other cultures. As your understanding of yourself and others grows, so can your capacity for empathy for the perspectives and experiences of others. Increased confidence. It is my hope that as a result of listening to this book, you feel more prepared and confident in your ability to serve clients who are culturally different than yourself. Increased knowledge base. Our personal experiences and the experiences of those around us are our starting point for building upon what we already know. A reasonable cultural competence goal. With respect to identifying a reasonable personal goal for cultivating cultural competence, I recommend that you consider the following three guiding principles. Learn to accept the inevitability of offense. No matter how much you learn about yourself or others, I do not believe that you can completely avoid cultural offenses. There are simply too many people in this world to learn it all. And even when you learn about a group of people, over time you discover that not everyone in a group is the same, and the rules you learned can change over time. This truth can help reduce the shame and guilt at not being able to meet the unreasonable prerequisite of exhaustive cultural knowledge. Instead, accept that despite our best efforts, unavoidable offenses will occasionally occur. Make intentional efforts to reduce the frequency of the offenses that will inevitably occur. You can begin to appreciate what you do know and use your growing knowledge to improve the quality of your cross-cultural interactions. For some, seeing your imperfect effort to try to avoid cultural offenses may help reduce the likelihood that something will be experienced as offensive. Make intentional efforts to repair relationships damaged by cultural offenses. When cultural offenses occur, you can employ specific strategies to repair the damage and reassure your clients of your openness and willingness to take steps to make future experiences together better. Three reasonable cultural competence goals. Accept the inevitability of offense. Reduce the frequency of offenses. Repair relationships damaged by offenses. Too often, well-intentioned helping professionals conclude that their lack of cultural knowledge and diverse experiences make the goal of effective multicultural awareness and competence futile. They perceive insurmountable barriers between their genuine intent and their goals of healthy cross-cultural relationship interactions. However, I believe that there are practical strategies that you can employ immediately to create a significant and positive impact on those you encounter personally and professionally, no matter how many cultural similarities or differences there may be between you. You do not need to know everything about everyone in order to have a positive impact on someone. By building upon skills you already possess and by incorporating new strategies, we will build a foundation that you can put into practice immediately, helping you strengthen your personal and professional cross-cultural relationships for years to come. Part 1. The Relevance of Cultural Competence. Why should we increase our cultural competence? The world is changing. Not only is the world changing, but the country is changing. Maybe even your city, community, or family are changing. As demographics continually change, the people you encounter on a daily basis change as well. Whether it's increased varieties of ethnic groups, increased freedoms for individuals to express their gender and sexual orientation, varying political beliefs, or differing rural versus urban values, things are slowly changing, and we need to be able to adjust to those changes. Our comfort zones must expand. Since the world is continually changing, we don't have the luxury to stay within our comfort zone. Sure, we all have a comfort zone, and that's okay. But if your comfort zone is so small that it limits whom you can help and how much you can help, then it's your responsibility to grow as the opportunity rises. I like to think of it like a playground game of tag. You begin with a home base where you're safe. Then when the opportunity arises, you run around a bit, and then you run back to your safe home base. Similarly, I think it's perfectly healthy to have a personal and professional home base, things you experience as normal, comfortable, and easy. However, every once in a while, I believe that it is beneficial to branch out of what is comfortable and easy and try something new. Learn about someone else, take a healthy interest in someone else's normal, and make efforts to meet the needs of someone new to you. There is no need to feel pressure to learn everything about everyone. That would be impossible. After all, no matter how large you expand your comfort zone, there will still be something outside of it. So learn to accept the benefits of your comfort zone, your scope of competence, and then make the most of opportunities to expand it. Professional bubbles no longer match clientele. There once was a time when professionals could operate in a professional bubble. Many times this bubble was created very unintentionally. I don't mean to operate in a professional bubble. I just happen to work in this certain suburb which has a large percentage of this certain population which tends to have a particular need that I have become very good at addressing. So I don't really have to expand beyond this bubble or my professional comfort zone. In one sense, that perspective has merit. However, in another sense, that perspective has significant limitations. Even if you are able to stay in the comfort zone of your professional bubble, despite the changing world around you, the reality is that your clients do not live in that same professional bubble. To remain effective at helping your clients live in a diverse world, it behooves you to branch out and to get to know that world outside of your comfort zone. We have an ethical mandate to maintain cultural competence. Most professional licensing boards, including but not limited to boards of psychology, marriage and family therapy, social work, and counseling, have published ethical codes of conduct, which at the very least have some type of disclaimer discouraging discrimination based on factors such as age, race, ethnicity, culture, color, socioeconomic status, mental or physical disability, language, gender, health status, religion, national origin, immigration status, political belief, sexual orientation, gender identity, or relationship status. This is the minimum standard. However, shouldn't our goal be to exceed this standard? Shouldn't we go beyond not discriminating and learn to appreciate different experiences, identities, and perspectives? I believe this extra step is a significant step on the journey toward increased cultural competence. Cultural competence leads to greater client satisfaction and rapport. Making the effort to understand and help your clients feel understood is one of the core components of building therapeutic rapport. We can accomplish that task by making efforts to understand our clients' presenting struggles, as well as their personal experiences and the culture in which they have developed and are learning to overcome those struggles. Cultural competence enhances our professional effectiveness. Building healthy therapeutic rapport not only helps increase client satisfaction, but it is also correlated with increased therapeutic effectiveness. When a client feels understood by their therapist, they are more likely to be receptive to therapeutic insights and challenges and more compliant with treatment strategies and recommendations. This ultimately leads to improved treatment outcomes. Ignorance is not bliss. Some therapists assume that as long as they have good intentions, they don't need to learn about others' experiences and how those experiences are similar to or different than their own. They believe that trying their best to avoid things that seem offensive is enough. Their sincere hope is that what they don't know can't hurt them. More importantly, they hope that their ignorance won't hurt their clients. Unfortunately, this hope to prevent harm in the face of ignorance actually contributes to unintentional harm to clients, and it occurs in a relationship context that was supposed to be a safe place. No matter how egalitarian you may consider yourself to be in your therapeutic role, you would do well not to take for granted the therapeutic authority inherent in that relationship. Just as you have the power to significantly help your clients, you also have the power to significantly harm your clients. Even if you don't have a negative tone, attitude, or intention, unintentional offenses and oppression, invalidated feelings, and identity trauma can occur at any time. I will explore several ways to reduce the unintentionally negative impact we may have on clients. Graduate programs offer limited professional training. Whether you have been a licensed professional practicing for decades, or whether the ink on your license is still wet, we can all benefit from increased knowledge and understanding of various cultural groups. Studies have shown that academic programs often focus too much on research and not enough on practical application. I was trained to have a great appreciation for the role of research and evidence-based practices. However, the vast majority of graduate training programs for mental and health professionals, and many other professional training programs as well, could improve their efforts to prepare students to serve effectively in a culturally diverse world. There is often a lot more emphasis put on history and theory and less on practical tools, strategies, and understanding of the diverse and changing needs of real people today. If you feel as though everyone else learned more about cultural competency than you did in graduate school, you are not alone in that feeling, and you're likely incorrect. Professionals are limited by their personal experience. So if we all haven't been trained to be experts in cultural competency, then what are we left with? Well, without sufficient training, we are left to rely on our own personal experiences. Unfortunately, many of us conclude that we haven't had enough diverse experiences to even come close to being sufficiently competent in understanding or meeting the needs of individuals, couples, or families from other cultural backgrounds. As you will hear repeatedly throughout this book, I do not believe that this dilemma has to be the end of our story. You likely have more resources than you think to get started, and we will explore some strategies to enhance what you have. An isolated therapy field increases the likelihood that therapists will remain in their comfort zone. Some of you happen to work in teaching clinics or organizations where therapeutic services are provided in a room that also has a two-way mirror, where a small group or class sits on the other side for consultation or educational purposes. For the rest of us, counseling services are completely confidential and private. On the one hand, this confidentiality provides ethical and emotional safety for our clients. On the other hand, it has the unintended and unfortunate consequence of creating an isolated environment for therapists, often with minimal support. Outside of supervision received prior to licensure and voluntary consultation received after licensure, therapists are often left alone, with little accountability and minimal encouragement as it relates to branching out from their comfort zone and becoming more culturally competent. Practically speaking, only you and your client will know how culturally competent and considerate you really are. And since in many cases you are the first and only helping professional your client has ever worked with, then only you really know how good you are at this. This is not something to be taken lightly, as this is a very big responsibility we have, not only to our clients, but also to ourselves, to make sure that we are handling clients' concerns and emotions with care. Knowledge and experience are both essential. As we wrestle with the dilemma of limited knowledge, alongside limited experience related to cultural experiences other than our own, a common question arises. Which one is more important, knowledge or experience? Interestingly, research shows it is personal experience combined with education and diversity training that results in higher cultural competency. Whether it's through the experiences you have had yourself or the awareness-producing moments you have experienced vicariously through family and friends, these can be combined with professional trainings to enhance your diversity competence. They need not be separated or prioritized. If you focus on one and minimize the other, example, I don't need to interact with others because I have read about them and taken a course, or what can a class or book teach me? I know everything I need to know from my personal experiences. You are limiting your capacity for understanding. Can you still be effective? Sure. However, you can be even more effective if you find a way to increase the lessons you've learned from your personal life and your educational experiences. Whatever area you personally have more of, consider that your strength. And whatever area you have less of, consider that your targeted growth area. Use what you have as a starting point and grow from it, one opportunity and experience at a time. Multicultural competence is synonymous with general counseling competence. Many wonder whether or not multicultural competence even needs to be a priority for those not working with a high percentage of individuals from minority backgrounds. Research on this topic suggests that not only is multicultural competence relevant to everyone, but the presence of multicultural competence is synonymous with general counseling competence. Coleman, 1998. Put another way, you cannot say, I'm a great counselor, I just don't do that multicultural stuff, or I'm a great counselor, I just don't work with kids, women, and clients over 65 years of age. Multicultural counseling need not be a specialty or niche. In order to be a generally competent counselor, you would do well to learn how to apply your knowledge and skills to the greatest variety of clients you may possibly encounter. Cultural awareness influences assessment and diagnosis. Whether or not you embrace the task of completing assessments and making diagnoses, mental health professionals have a responsibility to accurately assess and diagnose client struggles in order to provide effective client care. Because varying cultural experiences and understandings can impact the effectiveness of those assessments, insufficient diversity training can unintentionally influence those assessments in a negative way. Contrary to popular belief, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders is not the mental health Bible. As essential as it may be in the evaluation of client struggles, considering the DSM the mental health Bible tends to give it too much gravitas and skews its more practical usage. Instead, I like to think of it as a mental health checklist. It is a really big book of well-researched mental health-related symptoms categorized by titles, i.e., diagnoses. The titles also need to be realized for what they are. They are not declarative labels or brands to be tattooed on our clients' foreheads, as if to summarize the totality of who a person is. Rather, they are simply the shorthand words used to describe the symptoms the clients are struggling with. These shorthands are beneficial in that they point clinicians to the treatment plans that research has shown to be effective in reducing the symptoms associated with that diagnosis. In short, accurate evaluation leads to accurate diagnoses, which leads to accurate treatment strategies and hopefully to reduce symptoms and positive client outcomes. If that is the case, what happens when reasonable and common cultural misunderstandings negatively influence that process? Cultural competence decreases the likelihood of inaccurate evaluation incorrect diagnosis, and poor treatment outcomes. Inaccurate evaluation.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?